Hey, hi, I'm Bonnie. Welcome to this podcast, Make Joy Normal, where we chat about homeschooling and family life. With my co-hosts, Elizabeth and Christina, we address your questions and topics in a way that can create more joy in our lives. Please submit any questions you have by email or voice message in the links in the show notes. If you found this episode valuable, please share it with a friend, like, or leave us a review. That's how we get the word out. Thanks for trying to make joy normal in your own life. Awareness of beauty and an appreciation for art in all its forms has been an important aspect of our home education. As you know, the last few episodes, we've talked a lot about beauty and art. Years ago, I discovered Catholic Heritage curricula and was first introduced to their art appreciation resources for young kids. They have an art masterpieces series. A desire for a deeper understanding of art led us to CHC's program, Ever Ancient, Ever New. This program is in two parts. Part one of Ever Ancient, Ever New guides us from ancient art forms to the art of the Renaissance. Part two leads us from the art of the High Renaissance through to the modern era. What really drew us to this program was the art appreciation aspect of it and the history aspect of it with a distinctly Catholic perspective. But the program also presents art theory and opportunity for practice with a companion art pad that comes along with it. They give the children projects that they can work on to practice some of the art skills inherent in the program. CHC materials are always steeped in beauty, and this program is visually delightful. For us, it helped us cultivate a sensitivity for beauty and gave us a solid foundation in the eras of art and the characteristics that define them. The lives of artists and cultural influences that affected art are explored in the context of each chapter. One of the really awesome parts of Ever Ancient, Ever New is that it can be used independently from children about grade five and up, or it can be read together as a family. As something we've really valued in our family, this program makes art appreciation something that parents can share with their children without being overwhelmed by the idea of introducing art. Beautiful, it's simple, it's engaging. I will put a link to the program in the show notes. Have a look, and you can also enjoy all of CHC's art programs that they offer for younger kids as well. I am grateful for CHC's support of this podcast. Okay, I'm just continuing on with part three of Revolution of Mercy. Chapter three, Agitation, Discord, and Grace. Why do we react so strongly when our children misbehave? We are so frustrated by their negative conduct. Something makes us reactive. In the moment, it feels like we are reacting strongly because we just want it to stop. We just want peace, so we react. There is, however, a deeper reason for our reactivity. It comes from a place of love. Yep, believe it or not, we become agitated because they are our children, because we love them and we want the best for them. We react passionately because we love them so much. We can know for certain that these strong reactions come out of love and not just a temporal need for peace right now, although that plays into it too. We know for certain because we don't react the same way to other people's children behaving badly. Pretend for a moment our children belong to someone else. Two children are fighting over the same toy, or a toddler is fussing because he wants a snack. If we're involved in the crisis, we are usually composed. We're usually kind and detached from the emotional charge. It would be rare to shout at another person's child. We appreciate people's kids when they are well-behaved, but we desire good behavior in our children because we are invested in our relationship with them. How they act becomes a measuring stick for our success and sign to indicate our future. That outcome matters intensely to us. Naturally, we want our children to become adults who are good. We want them to be responsible, cooperative, selfless, self-motivated, virtuous, and faithful adults. Our reactivity comes from the great chasm we see between our desire for them to become ideal adults and how few of those qualities they manifest at the age of 2 or 7 or 12. They are not the adults we would like them to be, but they aren't supposed to be the adult we hope they will be. The chasm strains us. They are still children. When we only had small children and I would fret because they behaved like small children, my husband would say, quoting Dr. Rager Endy, "Honey, they're unsocialized human beings. It's our job to socialize them." Ultimately, they are barbarians, in the literal sense, uncivilized, and we must educate them and refine their behavior until they learn to act with love and to participate in the civilization of love that is the family. Training them in a way of a Christian is our job.
The agitation we experience daily is born of our deep love. But so often that love does not look, and certainly does not feel, loving. Our life is incongruous. We are living in perpetual incompatibility with ourselves. To love someone and fail to act lovingly towards him leaves us in a state of conflict. Living in discord is hard on us spiritually. It takes up a lot of space in our soul and in our brain. Often without realizing it, much of our energy is spent on living in a state of contradiction, ideals that don't match our actions. St. Paul understood this very well. I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. I do the very thing I hate almost daily, sometimes only in my thoughts, but still. I've been at this for a while now. I can only look on all those shortcomings as opportunities for growth, which is necessary for our mission. All members of the body of Christ are called to mission here on earth. That mission is evangelization. Pope St. John Paul II explains evangelization. Quote, proclamation of the word of God has Christian conversion as its aim, a complete and sincere adherence to Christ and his gospel through faith. Redemptoris missio. We must evangelize our children, neighbors, and communities. We are much more available for this great work to evangelize if we are not living in conflict with ourselves. We need to reconcile this incongruity in order to fulfill the mission of evangelization within our families and to the rest of the world. There is a massive gap between our ideals and our reality, however, and it takes time and effort to diminish the incongruity. Because earthly life is imperfect, there will always be that gap. It's there, in that gap, that we work out our salvation. We don't eliminate it by adjusting our ideals. Where would we be without ideals? It's the ideals that keep us striving for God. We don't eliminate the gap by removing or denying our reality either. The kids are there. We gave birth to them and we have to raise them. There's no one else going to volunteer. We bridge the gap by changing our reactions. In the process, the reality is changed because we have changed. The everyday challenges are less challenging because we learn to react less and to love more. While we should maintain our ideals, we must realize that they aren't the same as our expectations. That is a distinction that must be made because we frequently feel like we are falling short of our ideal when we see how our children behave. Ideals are about ourselves, what we are working toward for our families, our homes, and our relationships to God and others. Expectations, on the other hand, are a realistic perspective about the way life is. We can expect that we won't be at the top of our game when we're tired. We can expect children to use their free will. Our daily life is discouraging if we're unable to make a distinction between the ideals and the expectations. Reactivity to our children should be an expectation. The Christian ideal is that we respond lovingly to anything our children, or anyone else for that matter, can dish out to us. In the gap between negative reactivity, expectation, and loving response, ideal, we work on our salvation. We should be moving closer to God. Every time we respond to our children, we are moving closer to or further away from Him. If we are prayerful and aware of this fact, grace will move us steadily toward Him. There will be setbacks daily, hourly even. Yet each time we respond lovingly, we grow in confidence and skill. Each time we react negatively, we need to be gentle with ourselves and our children. Hold them tight and remind them that you love them. We can't overwhelm ourselves with the gigantic task of raising children. We need to spend our energy efficaciously by exercising self-control in the little moments of the day. We must intentionally remain in the present, tending to the moment facing us. Saint Thérèse of Lisieux tells us, miss no opportunity of making some small sacrifice, here by a smiling look, there by a kindly word, always doing the smallest thing right and doing it all for love. Following St. Thérèse's little way to holiness in raising our children will prevent us from being overwhelmed. We have to try at all times and in every situation. We will fall short constantly, but each little victory allows us to grow in skill and virtue. Failure is possible only when a person refuses to try. We shouldn't grow discouraged because of our strong reactions, since we know these come from a great love for our children. We know they are undeniably natural reactions. To discipline those we love in ways that are loving requires supernatural grace. And there is so much grace available to us. Through the sacraments and through prayer, we access these beautiful channels of grace. I can't imagine how anyone raises children without the gifts of the church. Sometimes a sliver of grace is all that gets us through the day. Perhaps the best advice I ever received on this subject was from an elderly and very holy priest. Years ago, I went to this amazing man for spiritual direction. I was lamenting my life because it was filled with all the ordinary and extremely trying situations of married life with several small children. But he told me what I needed to do. You must pray for your marriage every day. When you married your husband, God entered into a covenant with you. He promised you the graces of the sacrament of matrimony, and because it's a covenant, he can't refuse you. He must give you the graces, but you must ask for them. So I ask for them. I actually wrote a little prayer that I pray every morning to this day. It gives me confidence in God's promise as well as the graces that, according to my spiritual director, he can't refuse. Here is the prayer I wrote. Lord, I beg you to renew the graces that you promised me in the sacrament of marriage. Please provide me with all the graces I need to be the wife and mother that you intend me to be. We enter the great and noble task of bringing children into the world out of love and in obedience to God. Our selfless act builds up the kingdom of God. Our confidence is continually battered. It is difficult. Whatever difficulties we encounter, though, we must remain faithful. We must do what is right, even if the results are not what we hoped for. Encountering our worst selves when we become parents is inevitable. We grow in challenging situations. That's why motherhood and fatherhood offers us opportunity for growth. When we choose to build good habits, virtue, and access the graces available to us, it helps move away from negative reactions and towards loving responses. Then our natural impulses can better serve our mission as parents. For instance, passion is a great quality when channeled positively. Thus, we can learn to serve our children with love and passion for the greater glory of God. There is another thought that can give us greater ability to be kind in challenging situations. We are all broken. We live in a fallen world, and brokenness is part of the human condition. Even those of us raised in good families have wounds and weaknesses. No one heals himself by wounding another, said St. Ambrose. Rather, it is through kindness to others and patience with their shortcomings and growth that we find healing. When we are compassionate and tender in our dealings with others, especially our own children, grace abounds and the wounds of our own past, hurts, and disappointments receive a great supernatural salve. To summarize, there is a huge gap between our ideals and our reality. Ideals are rooted in our desire for heaven or what we're striving for. Expectations are rooted in a healthy understanding of our fallen world. We bridge that gap by changing our reactions. That gap is where we work on our salvation. We have to learn to live in the gap, which isn't comfortable. We heal our own hurts by being tender to our children. Chapter 4, Relationships and Transaction. Discipline in a Christian context has a distinct meaning. It's important to define it accurately. To discipline means to disciple, to teach, or to show. The Latin root of discipleship is disciplinare, to grasp intellectually or to analyze thoroughly. When we authentically discipline our children, we teach them or show them how to be obedient, cooperate, learn a new skill, or get along. Discipline and discipleship infers an interior disposition for both the teacher or mentor and the student, pupil, or apprentice. We must give our children every opportunity to grasp what we are teaching them. Here we're talking primarily about acceptable behavior, not by force, but through tender guidance. Culturally, we use a carrot and stick or rewards and consequences approach to gaining cooperation from children. Sometimes this method is successful in the sense that it secures the desired behavior from the children, but I'd like to examine the weaknesses of disciplining with rewards and consequences. 1. Parents must constantly find new ways, new carrots, new sticks, to address the increasing demands that naturally come as a child gets older. For example, offering a gummy bear to a very young child that won't get in a car seat isn't going to be enough bait for a 10-year-old to get his shoes on and get in the car for school. As children get older and become more savvy to the ways of the world, it becomes necessary to up the ante. 2. It requires a lot of energy to be on the cutting edge of what works with whom. Because each child is unique, different rewards and consequences are going to motivate different children. The cooperative child actually ends up getting less in the reward system because it takes less to motivate him. Children are all about fairness. The flaw in the system will be very clear to them. Rewards can have a negative effect then on those who are naturally compliant. In this setting, it is possible to undermine the compliant child's natural virtue of obedience. 3. Follow-through is integral to the success of the rewards and consequences system. If we don't follow through even once with the reward or the consequence promised, the system begins to completely fall apart. Here's the problem. If we mete out a consequence that doesn't get obeyed or cooperated with, we have created a whole new problem. We now have two layers of non-cooperation to confront: the original disobedience and the refusal to accept the consequence. How do we manage the situation while we're on the couch nursing a baby? Here's an example. A child leaves his crayons out after coloring. Mum tells him that she will put the crayons up if he doesn't put them away. The child doesn't put the crayons away, so Mum tells him she will have to put the crayons away for a week. The child still doesn't respond to Mum, so Mum tells him that he will have to sit in his room because the crayons are still sitting out. Mum has to haul the child to his room because he still hasn't put the crayons away. The threat gets bigger each time the child doesn't respond because we think that the bigger threat is going to be more effective. The child is crying, Mum is threatening no dinner, and all because the crayons didn't get put away. The punishment is disproportionate to the crime. Escalating battles are a needless but nonetheless regular part of life with children. Follow-through means to make certain the punishment gets carried out. Because we believe that the child will respond as our threat gets larger, we can end up in huge conflicts over very small things, or end up throwing in the towel and not addressing the behavior at all. Using rewards and consequences is a transactional method of gaining cooperation from our children. I will offer you this thing in exchange for you doing what I ask. Alternately, I will make you pay, take your toy, send you to the corner if you do not do the thing I ask. God is not transactional in our relationship with Him. He nudges us and calls us. Truth, goodness, and beauty are written on our hearts. We need gentle guidance to avoid the temptations that call us away from the true, the good, and the beautiful. In their book, Hold On to Your Kids, Gordon Neufeld explore how to follow a similar method with our children. They start from a premise that comes from attachment theory. The children naturally want to please those they love. Theologically, this is a very Catholic idea. Children are not born sinful and needing goodness to be beaten into them. Nor is goodness something we should coax from them with external inducements. Instead, we need to draw out their innate desire for good and direct their natural concupiscence. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. St. Paul's letter to the Romans. Sometimes it helps to place ourselves in the situation of a child to fully understand the shortcomings of transactional discipline. Imagine trying to learn something new in the workplace and having difficulty with it. Perhaps a new computer program, a new till, a new way of organizing the stockroom, or getting along with a difficult coworker. If our boss drew us aside and said, "Okay, listen, you're 33, right? Well, if you don't cooperate and start getting this and towing the line by this afternoon, you're going to have to spend 33 minutes in the back cubicle shredding paper." Ludicrous, isn't it? And yet, sometimes, we experience these things, even adult to adult. It is humiliating. A boss can be angry or annoyed with us, and we can usually get through it. If they humiliate us, however, the relationship is scarred. We aren't likely to want to go the extra mile for that employer. On the other hand, if our boss uses the reward approach, we're not likely to be impressed either. If you can figure out this computer program by this afternoon, I'll buy you a mocha. There's no dignity in that kind of prize. Our boss could help us, however, solicit the best from us and build our relationship at the same time by offering assistance, by negotiating the unfamiliar with us. He could discuss the work-related challenges and help us develop a strategy to handle them. A good boss might support us in our frustration, provide helpful advice on a difficult problem, or perhaps even share some personal experience that lends itself to learning from the situation. How we govern different situations can look similar, but it would be an entirely different thing for our boss to say something to us like, "Hey, you've been working really hard on this. Let me grab you a mocha and we can have a reprieve." The first is wheedling. The second is an act of kindness. It is not necessary to teach, motivate, or control our children's emotions with a system of rewards and consequences. Instead, we can walk beside them, teaching, guiding, and showing them the behaviors we value and expect as Christian parents. We can be with them. Over the course of their childhood, we naturally teach them many things. Acceptable behavior is just one of the many skills they learn along the way. We shouldn't treat behavior as something else, some other skill that doesn't require the same modeling, coaching, mistakes, and practice as other skills. Appropriate behavior is a skill to learn. Sometimes it takes years to learn. In fact, most of us are still in the learning stage for behaviors such as holding our temper or how to avoid anxiety. Rewards and consequences are seldom the motivating factors for personal growth. We teach our child to hold a baseball bat. Standing behind them, we wrap our arms around them and show them the best way to hold the bat. We talk them through it and encourage all the things they do correctly. We only expect results that are appropriate for their age or skill level. Our goals are for them to grasp both the physical control over their bodies and the idea of the game. Rewards and consequences are not part of the teaching. We encourage them. If we aren't encouraging, they won't want to play the game. Children will build an automatic defense system against baseball. Similarly, if we don't encourage them in obedience, cooperation, or getting along, they build defense systems that affect the peace we're trying to attain in family life, more than they will ever affect playing baseball. It takes years to learn baseball, but we build a bit at a time. Perhaps the most compelling failings of the reward or consequence system are these. Naturally compliant children don't need external motivators. Naturally non-compliant children don't care about external motivators. Eventually, we run out of carrots big enough to motivate our kids. And unfortunately, the only stick that we have left when we've used up every other stick is to kick our kids out of the house. That isn't a corner any of us want to paint ourselves into. Here's a real-life example of a contractual discipline a six-year-old girl is playing in her room. Her dad comes in and tells her that she must clean up her room. Coming back 20 minutes later, he repeats that she must clean up her room, adding that if she doesn't, she'll get a spanking. He comes back 10 minutes later and asks her why she hasn't yet cleaned up her room and repeats that she will get a spanking. She replies, without being impertinent, just stating the facts, that she decided she would take the spanking because she's having a really nice time. It was a business deal, wasn't it, after all? Do this thing I'm asking you to do or you will pay the fine. She chose the fine. I accept your offer. It was transactional. She simply observed the cost-benefit analysis. The external motivator was ineffective. It didn't encourage obedience or cooperation. We are not presented with transactions in our spiritual life. We are called to be Christ-like. We are given grace and forgiveness. Christ has laid down his life for us, and we must do the same. He didn't make us an offer. When our children do something wrong, the natural consequence is to rectify what they have done. It is written on their hearts. They feel bad if they hurt or disobey us. If we allow their conscience to do its job, they experience a twinge of guilt or remorse that will bring them back to us out of their love for us. Emotionally healthy children can recognize that little urge and respond to it. It isn't an oppressive guilt, but simply a feeling that they want to restore their end of the connection. Our end should always be available. Most of the time in healthy families, if children are rude or unkind, they will recognize and apologize for the behavior without ever being prompted, if we allow them to. God allows us to come to him in our own time and in our own way, and when we come to him of our own accord, contrition lies so much closer to perfect. If, however, we react negatively to behavior, their defenses immediately go up, our children retreat, or react to our reaction, and the situation escalates. Catechism of the Catholic Church, 1895. Society ought to promote the exercise of virtue, not obstruct it. The family and the relationships within it serve as the foundation of society. Transactional relationships affect the soul. When our motivators are all external, it becomes difficult to internalize our desire to do good. Constantly weighing our options and whether or not we're going to do what we are asked to do will affect our ability to grow. Even more, we become reliant on someone else making us do the things we need to do. Sloth, spiritual laziness, can develop, and we can lose the ability to even listen to what God's will is for our lives. I'll end there, and I'll continue on with chapter 4 in my next episode.